So, good morning. Morning again, everybody here on Zoom. Good to see you. Although we are done with the Ango, we are going to continue with our exploration of karma and move with that in different directions. Probably more than just one more session. We may spill into the new year with that. As it is proving to be a very important aspect of our practice, very relevant to us. So we are session number 4, and this part deals with past, present, and future. Having discussed the birth of karma and its basic mechanism, we can now discuss the next stage, which is how subconscious tendencies develop as part of karmic creation. Our subconscious tendencies arise from the ongoing mental activity that we generate to solidify our territory. This is like a trial period that never ends, where we are constantly trying out and testing our relationship with what's around us, developing an automatic mechanism to defend and preserve ourselves, as well as a mechanism to fight against whatever we perceive as a threat to who we perceive ourselves to be, basically. The process of self-preservation and self-defense develops because we have a sense of time, of past, present, and future. In terms of our own preservation, the past is the memories of our achievements and the memories of establishing ourselves. The future is the possibility of continuing that scenario, while the present is solidifying all of it while also taking a chance. We have developed too much reference to time, trying to record our successive achievements and the accomplishments we've collected. We have made a huge file and case history out of this, constantly recording our achievements. So the corpse of the present, us who we think we are, is being preserved as a record. And as we go along, we continue to achieve, but the whole process is more past-oriented because of our emphasis on recording everything. What he's talking about here is where the attention goes. So our attention is trapped in that mechanism of self-creating and self-sustaining, self-maintaining and defending, obviously. So, and the way he's alluding to that is with the way we are, our relationship with time, so past, present, future. If we step, the second we step out of time, we actually are stepping out of a separate sense of self. So what we call ego survives only on that, on seeing past, present, future as separated, or seeing time in the way we see time. When we step out of that, we are stepping out of chopping reality to segments. Does that make sense? Right? So as soon as we do that, we lose sense of time, we also lose sense of self, right? We can make those two one, actually, right? The sense of time gives us a sense of self. No sense of time, no sense of separate self, right? So I'm going to keep reading for a bit, but I want to know what you think about that, or where you're at with this, or if it's clear. So I'll open it up in a few minutes. We have developed too much reference to time trying to record our successive achievements. No, we'll keep going. We have recourse to our records as a way of proving ourselves and also as a way of digging up new information. If emergencies come up, we can reuse our old records and try to repeat our experiences from the past. So this process of recording goes on constantly. The record that we've developed is what is called memory. We use these memories to solidify our existence. Whenever we experience the loss of feeling or the loss of inspiration, we refer back to the habitual pattern of our memories, which brings us some out-of-date information. We try to adapt that out-of-date information to the up-to-date situation. It's a very, very important line, actually, a statement. We try to adapt our out-of-date information to the up-to-date situation. In other words, we try to force ourselves on reality. And that manipulation, he says, helps to produce anxiety in the present state. The whole process is what is called karmic creation. However, this process does not apply to the future situation at all. The future is a completely virgin situation. It is unoccupied territory. We can't manipulate the future because nothing has happened in the future so far. So the future is a completely open situation. So as far as the overcrowded situation of karmic creation, it is completely developed and manufactured in the present situation. Now, what he's describing here is the discrepancy between what is and what we think is, or what we think we are, right? Which implies a duality, right? A very common duality. But often, because it's so common, we don't even look at it as having another option. It's the only way we know how to live, the only way we know how to be. So we try to adapt. I'm going to go back to that line. We try to adapt that the out-of-state information, out-of-date information, to the up-to-date situation. And that produces anxiety in the present moment. What do you think about that? Or if you want to go back to the previous paragraph and say something about that, that's okay. Yes, go ahead. Justin. Just please raise your volume so they can hear you on Zoom.
So I'm listening. However, I find it a little difficult to understand precisely what it looks like to... lose your sense of self in time, or what it looks like to make the connection that you shouldn't be thinking in terms of past and future, what that really looks like. So in part, it makes sense to dispose of the future as something that, well, your karma, which is present with you here, is already going to create that. So in essence, the future is present with you here, but it's a little tricky for me to understand the bigger idea of what it looks like to, I guess, really put yourself in the present moment and disregard something like disregard past and future.
Right. So it's not complicated. The complication arises from the way we think about it or the way we try to understand it. Right, and this is the thing, we're trying to understand it using the very tool that it is pointing at as fallacy. Right, and that's where the problems happen, right? So if I ask you, if anybody asks you who you are, right, you will actually leave this moment and go somewhere else in order to dig out information to describe who you think you are, right? Because right now, you don't know. We don't know. Or we can say it right now, you're unknown. Maybe that's better, right? You're unknown. So the only way you can find, the only place you can find yourself is somewhere else. Right? Somewhere else in terms of what happened in the past. So you go there, you dig out information, you bring it in and say, here's who I am. But that's false because it's no longer. It may have been true in terms of what you have experienced at some point. But you're not experiencing it right now. So how could that be you? It's a memory of something that happened, But it has nothing to do with the openness or the spaciousness of this moment. So to come back to that means to be okay with not knowing. That's right. So without that, I can't reside here. Because residing here means residing nowhere, as no one. You know, being in the present moment is a cliche, the way we have used it, being present. It's nonsense. Because when there is such an experience, there's nobody that says, I'm present. There is no such thing. Because you're completely unified with the moment, and there's no gap. There's no gap. There's nothing else going on. There's no other possibility. Right? Any other possibility is conceptual. Yeah. Anna, then Koji.
I'm so grateful to hear that you can't be in the present, because I can never seem to be in the present. So then I was thinking, is the closest that we can get to that concept is to let go of the past.
What does that look like?
To let go of the concepts, the words that we've attached to what we're calling our ego, our sense of self.
Right. So to let go, okay, so what we're talking about is you can't delete memories.
Right?
You don't need to delete the memories. Right, so what we're talking about, what you mentioned, is the attachment to, the identification with. Right? So if I'm identified with what happened to me in the past, then I am that. I am the product of everything that happened in the past, right? Therefore, I'm behaving this way, and I am doing this, and I'm avoiding that, right? Because of things that happened. So as long as I'm identified with that, and attached to that, of course I'm not going to do anything else. And that's that, the leap of faith in a way, right? That's the jump. To not jump by letting go and deleting, but to jump from going along with who I think I am based on that. Right? That's the release.
Yes. Thank
you. Is that what you...
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, so being in the moment... In a way, it's sometimes I think it's like reinventing myself. I'm now a person who is in the moment, right? I'm no longer attached to my past, and it doesn't really matter what I'm. The attachment is the problem. Whether I'm attached to being a spiritual person or to being a Wall Street guy, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't. That's not the point. The point is the attachment. Yeah, Koji.
So, when you were talking about time earlier, it reminded me of Dogen's conception of time.
Right.
Time's being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, Justin, you asked, what does that look like?
Right.
Right? So, anyone who has, played a musical instrument or played a sport, or it happens to us all the time in martial arts, you know, the description of it for sports is that you're in the zone. Right? It's like you were playing your sport and you're just not even thinking about it, and you're just doing it because you've embodied all of the practice day after day, month after month, year after year. So you've learned everything so that when it's time to play, you can forget all about it and just play, right? And Zazen is no different than that. Zazen is the practice day after day, month after month, year after year. Zazen is the practice to be in the zone with your life, right? So, you know, I know you've experienced this when you give it in a recital. You start the first note and then you're not even thinking anymore, you're just playing, right? And so that's the closest analogy that I think I can give you to what it feels like. It's that feeling of being in the zone where your body and your mind are completely aligned in the activity that's happening. And really all we're trying to do with Zen, I think, is to be in the zone with our own lives. So you're not really thinking about, pulling stuff off the shelf and, oh, this worked last time, so I'll try this again. You're just, because of all the practice of Zazen, of sitting and sitting and sitting, you can bring that out into the real world, and when you encounter a situation, you can just improvise with that situation. And there is no, I should do this technique, I should think about it this way, I should look at it that way. You're just in the moment, which, you know, Jim Rear said is kind of a cliche, but, you know, you're engaged in the situation at a level wherein you're not really thinking about it. You're just doing. I had a lacrosse coach in high school. He used to say, don't think, execute. That was like his big line. And there was a lot of wisdom in that, although we didn't really get it at the time. But, you know, when you're so busy thinking about what you want to do, you become paralyzed, right? So you just need to do it. And the sports analogy, or the martial arts, is the closest that I can, I think, from a metaphorical perspective.
Yeah, and I'm going to comment on that in a minute. Okay.
No, in term, because I wanted to jump off.
Yeah, jump in. Okay.
So, I felt that most often when I was in orchestra, when I had to play with everybody, and you're in the middle and there's music all around you, and you have absolutely no choice but to be there. And you have no choice but to play the notes you're playing and join the others. You know what I mean? There's absolutely no choice in that. There's no thinking, well, let's rewind this. You know, it's not. It's there, it's present. But then it becomes beautiful. And then you have an experience where you're unified with everyone.
Right.
It's amazing.
So yeah, and what Kojin's saying is that, you know, we need to do that with the cacophony of life, right? And because it's definitely not, doesn't sound like that. It's a lot more chaotic. It's all over the place. Everybody's playing a different tune, right? And it's chaotic, right? And our lives are often very chaotic because we run around from one thing to another. And I think the point here that is raised in the attachment to time, and then, of course, Dogen's teachings about time being, is very important, because this is he's basically shedding light on where we're trapped or how we're trapped, because we are constantly addicted to time. Everything is about time, right? From the moment we wake up, we have a schedule, and all we are waiting for is just to get some gaps in that, some breaks in that, so we can actually take a breather. Everything is about, I gotta do this, I gotta take the kids to that, I gotta come back, I gotta cook, I gotta clean, I gotta go to work. Everything has to do with time. And we don't even believe that there's any other way to be. So I think we have to begin with that. There is another way to be in it, but then not be attached to it. Which means, while we are looking at the clock time, we have to, obviously, right, to function, we can, at each minute or second, lose it as well. We are aware of it, but we can lose it while we are being very aware of it, right? So we're not going to be late because we are checking out. I think it's more checking further in than out, right? And that's what you're talking about, is complete merging. You merge, and then what happens is that instead of being a slave to time or to the clock, you become the master, and the clock is serving you. That's the difference. So as practitioners, that's especially what we do, right? We are bringing practice to everyday life, and that's what we're talking about, to be the master of time, not the slave of it. To ride it rather than be taken up by that, or to ride the waves in a way. I'll get back to you, brother. Anybody on Zoom wants to? Yes.
Okay. Hi. This is Kago.
Yeah, Kago.
I just want to respond to actually something that was at the end of what Justin's comment was, which was like, how do you disregard the past? And I really resonated with letting go of it rather than disregarding it. I am thinking about this because I'm gonna go see my family and my parents in Chicago next week for holidays. I don't see them that often. And I am thinking about situations that come up where I feel like my family has been doing the same thing for 30 years, you know, I'm 30 years old. So, when my parents or, you know, when my mom does something that bothers me, it's really, you know, I just kind of go back to tell family I come back, you know, because we've been doing the same thing. When you've been doing the same thing for so long, it can feel like there's no other way to react. When I go home, I feel this, like, I feel so not zen because it's like I just, it's almost like a little work in me, the way that I act or the way that we act with each other, because it feels almost mechanical. Like, everyone always reacts in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I think having, like, and choose, like, when something happens, like, the first step to not just come back reflexively to what we've been practicing for so long is like, well, maybe there is another way. And that can be very hard to grasp when you don't know what it is. But I found that you can't just be like, what I've been doing for the past week is like running through a rehearsal of potential conversations I'm gonna have with different members of my family. And honestly, it's been exhausting because I think it's something like what was already said, like if you keep planning, like you can't actually do it. So there's this kind of planning for the future. And I'm like, I've been trying to plan for like, okay, now they're gonna say this, and I'm gonna say this, and I'm finding that like, I think the only way I can go into this kind of situation that I haven't been in a while, but I also feel like I've been in forever, is like, I just have to, like, trust that it's gonna be okay, because it is gonna be okay, and just ride with whatever happens. And also accept that I don't know what's gonna happen. And that even though all these plans, I'm like, okay, I wanna react differently than I did in the past, so I'm gonna make all these plans for the future. But both of those actions take me out from just being. That's how I'm thinking about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Keigo. So, yeah, you speak of something mechanical, right? Or dogmatic or repetitive, or right? Everybody is saying the same things and acting the same ways, right? And it's very true, because often I think what happens, we are sleep living, right? And that's the copying and pasting. And because we are really not there, we're somewhere else. We are borrowing from what was, and also relying heavily on the idea of a fixed self, right? Now I am supposed to be this person, and you're supposed to be that. And now we are supposed to communicate based on that assumptions, right? You this, I'm that. Now those images communicate with one another, right? So it's kind of like it's rehearsed in a way, right? Constantly, doing the same thing again and again. And the sad thing about that is that it is lifeless. It is lifeless, right? We don't partake in what is. We look at each other, but while looking backwards, mostly. So we're not seeing each other, and we're not seeing what's going on. It's very sad, but it's a very common way of living. Right? Thank you for that. Before I go back to you, you want to say something, right?
Sure.
Go for it.
So it's interesting because sometimes it feels like we almost like worship our karma. Like we worship
right.
all of the things that brought us to this, to where we are now. And worship in the sense of like, we just give it to, we give it too much credit. Like we let ourselves be defined by our karma rather than letting ourselves be defined by the moment that our karma brought us to.
Right.
Like, not just, oh, I'm a Zen guy sitting on a Zen cushion. No, I'm somebody speaking in a room of people that are listening thoughtfully.
Right, right, right.
Rather, like you're less separating to connect with this past thing and more connecting with now, which I think is where the being present gets caught up in a cliche.
Right.
Because it's surrounded by all these cliche kind of minutiae things rather than just...
Right, you say worship, but it's very true, but we are addicted. It's because we're addicted to a self.
Yeah.
And the self is created through karma, right? And that's the attachment to karma is creating the self. And then this is what we're attached to. So the addiction is to that, right? So, and it's falling in love with that. You know, Shantideva, as you've heard before, said magicians fall in love with the mirage woman they themselves create. That's, we create a mirage of me, and then we, of course, love it, protect, even when we hate it, we love it, by the way. So poverty mind is another way of expressing love for oneself. Because people say sometimes, well, yeah, but I really don't like myself. That's the point. Liking myself or disliking myself is addiction to a self. Because there is a self there. Either way, so you can get out of it by saying, well, for me, it doesn't work that way because, or it doesn't pertain to me because I don't like myself. It's the exact same thing, right? Either way, it's very egoic way of being. We think ego means just those who walk around pounding their chest, look at me, look at me. Those who are hiding is the same thing. We have to say it again and again. If you've taken Jukai, obviously you know because we talk about it in Jukai study, right? It's a very important point. But anyway, anyone else on Zoom? We're good. Okay, Justin, go.
I have to ask for clarification on something because
yeah.
I really don't understand it. So you say that the cliche phrase of being in the present moment, it's like something that misses the mark. So how does it miss the mark in contrast to like Zazen meditation where we anchor ourselves in our breath, which is the present moment? So what's the difference between the cliche statement, being in the present moment, and proper, you know, Zazen meditation?
The statement is the difference, right? So if you see yourself as the one who is present, you create a duality. If you lose that seeing to the moment, there is no duality. So there is no I am in the present. I am in the present or I am out of the present is the duality. That's one. The other thing is, it's not a choice. The only choice is, or the only question is, we have to ask, where is my awareness? Where is the awareness, right? If the awareness aligns with what is, then what we talk about becomes a reality. So we don't need to talk about it. It's just the only reality there is. As Dogen said, time and being. Time being, right? As one word. Time is being, being is time. The being and the time are non-dual. And that's stepping out of what we call clock time or past, present, future way of seeing time. One is one, right?
So in essence,
yeah.
The cliche statement, be in the present moment, hearing that it does nothing to inform you of your ego nature founded in a sense of time. And that's where it sort of misses.
It's because, pointing to awareness, right?
Yeah.
Like where you put your awareness.
Yeah.
Well, go back to dynamic self or dynamic being. A dynamic being can never be the same, is not the same. You know, to take the analogy of a river, right? We say this river is called whatever, right? You know, the Delaware River, right? what is the Delaware River? We the name is fixed, the river is not. You say, this is the Delaware River. A second later, you point at the same thing, it's no longer that. We don't give it a different name every second because that would be silly, right? So we have to agree on a name, but we also have to understand that what we're pointing at is changing constantly. We say, oh, it's the same river, I've seen it many times. No, I have not. We know we have not because it's moving. How could it be the same, right? So, and that, so we have to use language in a way that is just functional, but not absolute. Not to use language to create an idea of absolute, right? And that becomes fixed. You are changing. That's why not knowing is the best way to enter that or align with that, right? Not knowing. Yeah. So I'm going to keep reading another part and we can continue the discussion. In the present situation, we create certain immediate emergency measures which are traditionally described as the five poisons, or the five kleshas, which we talked about in one of the talks, I brought it up, which are anger, pride, passion, envy, and ignorance. Right? The five poisons. Anger, pride, passion, envy, and ignorance. Anger is based on intellectualizing, justifying the reasons why we should be angry, why we should get upset, why we should put out our aggression. It is very manipulative. Pride is another way of justifying our field of existence or our ground by making sudden moves of one-upmanship. Passion is trying to draw in or magnetize the situation to our convenience, so that the situation could be an adornment, a way of enriching ourselves, what you said before, right? A way of enriching ourselves. Envy or jealousy is a way of comparing situations all the time, feeling that our efficiency has been questioned or challenged by others who are also involved with this same competitive logic. What happened? Okay. The same competitive logic. Ignoring the whole situation is another strategy. Those five approaches are ways that we constantly try to maintain ourselves in the present. They have nothing to do with the future at all. You guys, can you put it down? It's okay. Let's continue. Let's continue.
I was going
to
say.
Okay.
Anna, do you
want? What happened? Okay, something spilled. You got it. In other words, our emotions are a way of maintaining ourselves in the present situation. They are like limbs of our body. Our limbs make our body functional. With them, we can exercise, we can feed ourselves, and we can defeat our enemies, kicking them with our feet or grasping them by hand or whatever. Employing these emotions keeps us very busy in the present. So I think this point here is worth taking a short break and seeing where we're at about this, because I think it's very important. There's a lot there, right? When he talks about the five kleshas and how they work, how they manifest, and how they sustain us as egoic being. Yes, you can just pass it along and everybody will take their own. How's that? So, anger, pride, passion, envy, and ignorance. And what he's saying here is about anger, right, which is very common, and right, obviously, to all of us. And what he's talking about is how it's based on intellectualizing and how we justify the reasons for being angry, right? So, any thoughts about that? Yes.
Are all of these followed by rational justification?
Well, what do you think?
Maybe.
No. But this, we're not trying to we're not trying to take on an idea, right? We're using this as a way to look at ourselves. So to answer the question, look at yourself. Don't look at the text. Right? If you look at the text without looking at yourself, then it becomes another thing which you'll file in your mind. Right? And it's going to make it bigger and more cumbersome. That's not the point. So use it to examine yourself. When you feel anger, right, and you how do you justify it? Somebody, well, yeah, we're only talking about you. Who else? You can sit with that. Anyone else? Yes.
So I feel like when I'm angry, I feel like I'm being punished. I feel like when I'm angry or sad or even rageful, sometimes, you know, once in a while, I'll be like, why? You know? And I feel like I'm being punished for that. But then not being able to see that and not as a punishment, but just as part of what's happening. That's always been my difficulty. So,
right. Yeah. So, right. So, punishment, retribution, there is something external. Or something or someone, that doesn't matter, right? Whether it's a personal situation, then there is a duality, there's a gap. That's exactly the point of stepping out.
Yeah, why should I have to go through
this? Being aligned, how can anything or anybody punish anything or anybody? There's no gap. When there's no gap, it changes, it moves. Now, it doesn't mean we don't feel frustration. It doesn't mean we have all kinds of experiences, but the point in that is experience it and keep moving rather than stop and point the finger.
That's easy to do it can be perceived as something more simple when you're on the road and somebody cuts you off and you get angry. But when you have someone who passes away in your life, or something an entity that passes away in your life, that kind of anger, it feels like...
Right. Well, it's a good example because, you know, we all are going through, have to go through, will go through losing loved ones, right? And it's not a question. Here's the question with that, you know, so we talk about alignment, right? So can I be aligned with the sadness without blaming anything and anybody, right? So because if I'm aligned with the sadness, I'm accepting it as part of being human, right? If I retaliate against it, what I'm doing is I'm actually fighting what it means to be human. To be human is to go through such experiences. So what would I like to be if not human? What's the option here? Right? So what I'm doing is I'm fighting who I am. It's not that there's no sadness, but sadness is not wrong. We think something's wrong. When somebody dies, when a loved one is no longer in this form, there is sadness, but it's not wrong. That's the problem. We think it's wrong. How could it be wrong if it's what we are, that kind of a creature or being, right? You know, we are, well, we, you know, the five remembrances. Again and again, we chant that. It's not a choice. So, but there is a choice. I can retaliate and I can fight. At the end of the day, of course, life will have the last word. But I can go through that kicking and screaming, or I can go through that being aligned. Those are the options. Those are the only options we have, right? And being aligned is a lot less painful. That's just the way it is. Being aligned is less painful. Not just when something like this happens, but always. Being aligned immediately, whatever is happening, first align, then do something. Aligning means being in full agreement with the situation. That's what it means. cut the gap. Then, not only then do something, then you have the power, a lot more power to do something, because your power is not lost in fighting what cannot be fought. Major.
So I think it's also when you lose someone, if you get angry because, or whatever your experience is, because you're mentally and everything, you're never prepared for it, but then you justify certain things. Like, I had different reactions when different members of my family passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had different reactions. When my child passed away, you're thinking, how is this right? It's a child, right? So of course the anger comes through. You're angry with the world, you're angry with God, you're angry with everybody, you're angry with doctors, you're angry with everyone, because like, how can, you know, they allow this to happen, right?
Right.
So when my parents passed away, so, you know, I got older and time passed, I noticed that when they passed, there was a different reaction. It was a sadness. It was, you know, missing them and this and that. But it wasn't that kind of anger where, like, somebody did something wrong. It was their time. They were older, and it's that when older people get older and they're sick, eventually they succumb to their illness and they pass. So it's a different. It was a different. Reaction and feeling for me in my body, in my thoughts, and how I dealt with it and everything else. So sometimes we're just attached to what we expect, when it's the right time for someone to leave us and when it's not the right time, you know? Was it right or wrong? No, I don't think it was, as you're saying, it wasn't wrong. It was part of being a human being and part of the experience. And I'm thinking to myself now, like, eventually, when my time comes, I'm sure some people are going to react a certain way about it, right? But it's not the wrong thing. It's going to happen when it needs to happen, right? So it's more like the story that we create for ourselves is when is the right time and when it's never the right time, but it's how, where you are emotionally and mentally and whether you're in more in line at that moment.
Right.
With the situation and with the experience.
Right, and the parameters that, you know, the so-called wrong, right? I say it's wrong. The parameter to that is my emotions. All my emotions, right? My thoughts and emotions are the parameters. I'm saying this is wrong because of the way I feel, right? That's what makes it wrong in my eyes, in my own view, right? But the fact that it is much greater than me and my emotions. Everything is so much bigger, right? So me and my, how can that be such a fixed, how can I use it as a fixed parameter to judge reality, right? I mean, we talk about self-centeredness, or self-concernedness, that's what it is. Again, it doesn't mean we don't feel the entire gamut of emotions as human beings. And again, it's part of being human. But it's what we do with it that creates the problem, not the feelings themselves. It's what we take, how we take the feelings and we create something. And then we want to defend that or retaliate or complain or say it's wrong, basically.
I feel like they're the ones that left, but eventually it was done to me.
Right.
You know?
Right. I was wronged, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's not just wrong as an idea. It's something was done to me.
So that's where the anger comes.
Right. So then I'm not taking responsibility for experiencing the pain. I am saying this pain is because of something that should not have happened. It's a very strange way to be, isn't it?
Yeah. Now I'm working with the idea now that when anger comes or a certain feeling, I try to kind of like, instead of just automatically going through it, is kind of like, what triggered that? Like what not necessarily what the person did, but what am I going back to and remember? What triggered that in me so that I can kind of be aware of it. Where is it coming from?
Mm-hmm.
So I read, while I was away, I read a book about a world without complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny how many times I caught myself, like, it was Sal and I, we were like making a game out of it while we were away. And it's like, I cannot believe, you think that you're not, but I cannot believe how many times, you know, even though we were in this beautiful space and everything else and stuff, and we actually kind of, we caught ourselves, and now we're like looking, and he was like, ah, because you're supposed to move a bracelet every time you complain from one wrist to the other. So I put a spongy, and it goes like, he's like, so I was like, the way you're going, that thing's going to snap.
Right.
So we were making a joke out of it. We were like, well, you need one too, you know, because you're complaining as well. So we went back and forth, but it was making you aware of how much sometimes you feel that what's going on around you is triggering you when you're not actually being sometimes responsible for your own feelings and the way you're showing up.
Right, and the freedom is found in not pointing a finger. Right? When we turn it inwardly, then we find freedom. When we turn it outwardly, we get stuck. We get stuck, and there is a justifiable reason to be stuck. Because you did this to me. Or life did that to me, right? And I'm stuck, and that's it. That's it. There's no other, it's a dead end. Right? And again, it's what he's saying is we feel justified. And then also he's talking about, as I read, the pride. Pride is not a way of justifying our field of existence or our ground by making sudden moves of one-upmanship. Right? So, and that's another way to sustain me as the one who is this way or that way. All comes back to duality. Because when the gaps shrink, all of it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you know, I find that whenever I'm struggling with an emotion that's triggered by something, and I do the same thing that you do, Major. I try to, like, figure out where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's coming from a fixed idea that I had about how something should have been or should be, right? And it happened to me a lot when I was younger with work, right? I thought work should be a certain way. And when it wasn't, you know, I would, you know, freak out, right? And, you know, get angry and stuff like that. So, you know, as I've been practicing Zen more and more over the years, I've realized that these emotions that happen, there's nothing really wrong with the emotion. Like, if you're angry, just be angry, right? But, you know, don't be attached to the anger, or don't be attached to what you think the reason for the anger was, right? Because, as Jeremy was saying, if you become attached to the anger, then you're fighting the anger, right? And then all you are is angry, right? You're not even living anymore, you're just angry, you're just being angry. So that's how I kind of came to understand it, because it is extremely difficult. You know, a couple of years ago we did an ongoing acceptance,
right?
And acceptance is a tough word. Right? It's like, you know, you can immediately go to like this doormat view of life where life is just running over you and you're just accepting everything because you're a sap. But that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about acceptance. We're talking about acknowledging what's happening, but at the same time not being attached to it. You know, in the similar way that we talked about losing a loved one, you know, you're going to experience all those emotions. And all those emotions are perfectly normal and natural, you know?
Right, so you know, when we talk about, so in Chukai, right? When we take Chukai, we vow, I will not be angry, right? So I will practice patience, right? And we do need to, when we talk about it, we do need to explain, right? Thank you. What happened? That what we're talking about. So when we say I will not be angry, it doesn't mean I will not experience the emotion we call anger. It means I vow to not identify with it, right? Because how can we not experience it? Of course we're going to experience everything. So how can I experience it without identifying with it? So in a way, there is anger, but nobody is angry, we can say. There is anger, but there's no one who is angry.
Right.
That's a practice, right? Because when we do it, when we practice it this way, then we're not suppressing emotions. And sometimes that is misunderstood as we're supposed to suppress our emotions, right? And stay stoic. That's another nonsense, right? We may appear stoic, but not because we're suppressing.
Right. Well, that's just overlaying.
Because we are regulating, because we are working with the emotions. Actually, the Buddha spoke about regulating emotions as something we need to do in practice. You have to know how to regulate your emotions.
Yeah, but stoicism is stiff.
No, not that way. I'm saying the appearance may seem that way, but you may be very dynamic within. But, you know, the facial expressions may not reveal that because the situation calls for you to be in a specific way.
Well, then, is it wrong for somebody who's hypersensitive to emotion?
Yeah.
And feels it more keenly,
yeah,
perhaps, than others. Is that wrong for them to not appear stoic?
To wear their emotions on their sleeves.
Is that wrong?
Again, nothing is wrong, but then in that case, we have different strengths and weaknesses, right? I mean, it's just natural, right? And we talked about, I talked about it last Sunday in the talk that, you know, we have to direct our attention in terms of practice to where the weak points are, not to where we're strong. I'm good at that, so look at me. Okay, great. But then look at what you need to bring some attention and awareness to so you can strengthen and work with that, right? Learn yourself, we're saying, right? Learn yourself so you learn how to work with the way you are and then function in a way that is of benefit to everyone. Right? Learn to work with yourself, all of us, right? So we have different ways that we experience life, and life is triggering us in different ways, right? So we get triggered, and the question is, how do I work with the trigger in a way that does not create harm to others?
Yeah, because if you identify as someone who wears their emotions on their sleeve,
but that's fixed.
Yeah.
Right. That's fixed. So right, we don't want to fixate on it. We want to identify it, acknowledge it, and then work with it. Yeah. Identify this. No.
I'm not talking about identifying with it. I'm talking about feeling it almost all the time.
Right, and that's on you to figure out how to work with that all the time, which means you're gonna have to. This is where upaya comes in. What's the best upaya for you? Right, or for whoever is feeling this way, what's the best upaya? How do I work with that? Rather than give up and say, well, that's the way it is, and it's going to be this way, and it's going to dictate the way I behave. That's the question. Does it dictate the way I behave? Right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep reading for a little bit longer, and we'll open it up again. In terms of the past, we use karmic incidents that have occurred to try to relive the success or the entertainment that we have used to have. And then he says, kind of like speaking of himself or ourselves, once I used to be happy, I want to repeat that. I used to be powerful, let's repeat that. I dealt with my enemies very successfully, so let's repeat that. Let's relive that. The inspiration to relive the past comes from our present experience of aggression, passion, pride, jealousy, or whatever emotions we experience. They inspire the whole production. The whole karmic force of doing things by impulse, which we then have to refer back to and relive, creates possibilities to entertain ourselves. Now, the entertainment is not what we think it is. It's more the being in love with, or being, yeah, what you said before, right? Whether our mentality is connected with fighting, being angry, being seductive, or whatever the case may be, the entire approach is looking for entertainment. All aspects of the karmic situation, whether they are spiritual or worldly karmic activities, come from or originate from ignorance and the five poisons, anger, pride, passion, envy, and ignorance. Any karmic activity comes from that same mechanism. Right? And so the entertainment he's talking about is keeping ourselves busy, right? And as long as we keep ourselves busy, we sustain the self. That's what the self lives on. That's why Zazen is the medicine. Because when we sit Zazen, we're not being entertained by anything. Which is why, you know, when people say, I am bored, often I will congratulate them. I'm bored with my practice. What else can I think of? This is great. This is great because we are at the point of realizing how addicted we are to being entertained. And that's the entertainment he's talking about. Entertaining ourselves with ourselves, in a way. Right? Karma, therefore, is one of the most efficient functional mechanisms that sustains samsaric force all the time. It propels and sustains suffering, right? You refuse to give up or give in or look twice at the actuality or the reality. Or look twice means seeing reality and seeing that there may be other options or another way to be or respond to the moment. You would like to go on feeding your neurosis rather than coming to any reasonable giving up of ego's ground. And this is, I think everybody can know what he's talking about. Everybody can experience that or knows where it is in us, right? You would like to go on feeding your neurosis rather than coming to any reasonable giving up of ego's ground. The price is very high for us. Because if I give up the identification, I give up myself. But that's the only way. Otherwise, there is no option. There is one way. And then it is predetermined. While future is open, in this way, it is predetermined. When you're ignoring the existence of cause and effect, you are being very random and frivolous. And as long as there is no questioning or giving up of ego's ground, you are creating a very heavy karmic situation constantly, which means it's going to repeat itself. Tomorrow, next day, next year, life changes, the reactions are the same. The triggers are the same, the reactions are the same, while we are changing. In terms of the future being open, an open space, there is no security in the future or in the present either. There is no security and there is no entrapment. It's a free situation. So there's no security means there's no entrapment. If we want security, we're trapped. We want things to be fixed. So we want to hold on to people that we love, right? That's very common. Logical, actually, way of wanting something to be the same, and that's how we are trapped. We refuse to align with life. That's what it means, right? There's no security and there's no entrapment. It is a free situation. So karma or karmic force has both a very powerful as well as very simple aspect. It is powerful because all these recorded psychological neuroses can bounce back at you at any time, which we know, right? You know, we think we're done with something and there it is again, we get triggered. At the same time, however, you can take advantage of the present situation on the basis of the inspiration of the future being an open situation. So as long as we can see that the next moment is wide open, it is by nature wide open, then we can, as he says, we can take advantage of that, be inspired by it, and release the attachment. Or drag the attachment to a completely free situation. Then we feel trapped. So the negative and the positive aspects coexist all the time. Death and birth are happening all the time. I think it's clear. What do you think?
not even in theory. Like in theory and in practice, it's hard because, so we talked earlier about like kicking and screaming, and you kind of, Kojin, you sort of mentioned, yeah, well, when you're kicking and screaming, then kick and scream fully. And I think that's where I get caught up because like there are moments in life where you just don't want to observe the situation, you don't, and how can I fully not want to do something? I think that's where, like for me, I would get tripped up, because there are situations, you know, everybody, we all, like there are situations where you want to be fully there and you want to be present and you want to do all, you want to interact with life on life's terms, but you also want to kick and scream because that is part of life's terms. Me kicking and screaming is part of the situation that's unfolding. So even that, I think trying to, like, for me, I think it feels like I try to separate myself from the kicking and screaming, or when I feel angry, I try to separate myself from the anger because I'm trying to be a good Zen student, or I'm trying to be a good dad or a good husband. So I separate myself from the negative. And I guess because every psychology book said don't do that. You know, don't yell if you feel like you need to yell, or don't cry if you feel like you need to cry. So I think that's where I get lost is how to kick and scream skillfully, because it's part of it.
Right. So then there are many ways to. So we talk about processing on the go. We can take. Sometimes we can, and if we can say I'll be back in an hour and go take a walk and ground yourself, great. But there are many situations that's not an option, right? You have to do it on the go. So, and I think often what works for me is to make the situation or the person the most important thing, right? So, and it helps, it's very helpful because not just the situation and the person, but the well-being of the situation and the person you're with, right? So you give yourself to the situation, which means you don't get so caught up in what you feel and think about it, right? So again, it's not suppression, it is shifting the attention, right? From what is raw, right, and very demanding to what is needed at the moment. Because you need it at the moment, whether it's your son or work or whatever, right? The situation needs your attention more so than your emotions, right? That needs you. You don't have the luxury. I'll be back. Let me pause now. Stay right there. I'll be back in an hour or a day, right? That doesn't help. Doesn't work, right? So then I don't have the option to do that. Okay, so the question is, how can I care for the person in the situation while at the same time regulating my emotions? And it has to happen at the same time. But, you know, sometimes what we need to do is acknowledge, here is how I feel, right? I'm acknowledging it, and I'm going to put it aside, focus on that, and come back to the feeling. And I can tell you from so many times, you know, teaching classes, right, for decades, right? You know, I remember coming, you know, especially when I was going through rough patches and things like that in life, I would come to the dojo feeling heavy with emotions. Things are going on, right? Unprocessed yet. And I remember going to the changing room, taking off the clothes, putting on the uniform, right, the gi, before class, and I would leave the stuff there with the clothes. I'll get back to that, right? I'm not dumping or deleting. I'll get back to it. Then I go, I do the class, and the class is about people, right? Why? Because people show up. They take the time out of their schedule, right? They drive, they deal with traffic and everything to show up to receive teaching. I'm here to do that, to give them teaching. I'm not going to think about myself because I'm here for them, right? And I think magic, for me, it was magic happened every time because while doing that, I will feel lighter. All the heaviness he's talking about will just be deflated and subside due to the process of giving yourself to others. That's what does it. Give myself to others. Then I would go back to the changing room and look at the stuff and it, yeah, I needed to process, but it was a lot easier. It was because I was lighter. So the heaviness is not in the emotion. The heaviness is in me. See, that's something we need to work with. Don't even take my word for it, obviously. But examine, is the heaviness in the emotion or in me? Is it because of what happened that I don't like, or is it because I'm resisting it? We clump it together. That's the problem, right? Everything is like one big mush. And there's no way out. So a very important point what you're saying. You know, you say, I'm going to be a good Zen student. First of all, don't define that ever. Because there is no such a thing. Right? If you want to be a good Zen student, give up what you think being a good student means. Begin with that. And then give yourself to the situation. Does that make sense?
Fushin wants to say something.
Fushin, yes.
I love your example, Ojinru, because the amazing thing that happens when you put on your uniform and hung up your life concerns and went and taught, when you go back to your life concerns, you're not the same person.
Right.
It's not, you can't go back to those concerns as the person you were when you hung them up. So that's the beauty. And people often say, well, then you're repressing. You're not repressing a thing.
No.
You put something on pause, which allows a space to open.
Mm-hmm.
And in that space, I'm just trying to give words to it, but in that space, it's like something moves through. that stuckedness.
Right.
Shifts just enough that you can't return to the life that you hung up there. You cannot return to it in exactly the same place.
Right. Thank you. And yes, you've changed because, first of all, you have softened. Right? And,
yeah.
and that's key, right? So there is the rigid, which is stuck and is not changing. The idea is not changing. And then there is the reality. But often we have to do something, in order to soften, something that can help us soften. And again, the magic of giving oneself to others is one of the best ways to do that, right? Because that magic does that. It, as we say, to aerate. We aerate ourselves, right? We lighten up. And then what happens? We find our way back to flow. And then we go back to deal with what we have to deal with, but from being flowing and dynamic rather than being heavy and static. That's the thing. Again and again, we have to go back to that. In that, we are no longer repeating. We're not repeating anymore. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Also? Kego?
Yeah. I also want to say that it took me a while, like sometime into my adulthood, to also learn to be angry without being abusive. And I think that is part of a skillful expression of anger. And I think that, when I say angry without abusive, it's without abuse to others, but also without abuse to yourself when you're angry. Because I think I learned that because there were times when I had friends or loved ones be angry at me, and it was clear that they still loved and cared about me and wanted to sustain the relationship, but it was a gift of authenticity to me that they said, I'm actually really angry right now. Or, I could tell the way that they were speaking and just how, emphatic they were that, this is for real. And so I just wanted to, and so sometimes I guess, anger, sometimes if you're flowing in the moment, expressing the anger can be part of the flow. But I think just like what has been said, you want to express that anger without completely losing connection to the other person or losing yourself. You want to continue, if you're going to express that anger, you do it with care. You do it because this is actually really important. So it can be useful as an authentic self-expression.
Right, thank you for that. Actually, it's a very good point because unexamined anger often will lead to abuse, some abuse, whether it's abusing oneself or others, right? Unexamined anger, right? Sitting on it, wallowing in it, will lead to some version of abuse, some form of abuse, right? And so very important that we turn towards it and examine it and process, regulate and process on the go. So we do have to become very skillful as practitioners, right? We have to become skillful as human beings. We have to become skillful at processing our unique emotions. Maybe that's another thing which needs to be brought up, right? It's very unique. All our emotions are the same in general, but the way they appear is very unique. So how do I study myself, get to know the way I react, and then work with that in a way that does not cause harm to me or to others, right? To intercept that. If I don't intercept it, it will lead to some form of harm or abuse. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, so we're not going to read more. I just wanted to, we're going to wrap it up in a few minutes, but anybody else has anything to say about anything that was brought up today? Yes.
Okay. The last thing that you read, the beginning was very, didn't resonate with me well. I didn't understand it. And then towards the end, it really came full circle, and I'm going to ask for clarification on the ending once I explain my take on the beginning, which was we're not meant to look into our past and look at our triumphs and failures and then use that to inspire future action. Immediately I was thinking, well, when you put it like that, what not to do, the ego actually seems to be incredibly useful in modern day because being a student, I have very strict goals to reach and using my vision of the future and fears from the past, well, it actually helps me move forward as a student and also in other areas of life, like exercise and I'm sure providing your family with anything. Like, it's a very powerful tool to be able to use bad experiences from the past, good experiences of the past, and to be able to project yourself into the future so that you can act in a way where your ego is rewarded. But the idea is that it is the ego being rewarded. And so towards the end of that passage, after talking about what not to do, it sort of resolved and said, well, this is what you should do, and this is the proper way forward. So I'm going to ask for clarification on the end of that
passage. So ego being useful, that's the ego saying, don't let me go. Okay, so we don't call it that. There is what we call a provisional self. Provisional self, right? Provisional self, there is such a thing, right? And it's a dynamic self that appears, right? And there are memories and there are things that may be useful, right? So we don't walk around blank. That's not the meaning of practice or the meaning of the text. It has to do with not identifying, not memorizing, not having memory. It has nothing to do with that, right? Of course, things happen in the past. You learn from that, and you know what to do, what to avoid, right? You know what's dangerous, what's safe. Of course, it makes sense. And you have experience, right? You do something long enough, you have experience, and then you apply those experiences. But there's no negation between this and what he's talking about here, right? You can do that and at the same time not be attached to self or not create a self. And at the same time, see that the future is wide open. While you may have experiences, the way you use the experiences will have to be different because the situation will be brand new. When it is born, it's brand new. How can he say, well, I've done it in the past, it should work now? There's a great story for that, and it'd be good to finish with this. It's about the hunter, right, that goes out to hunt, and he's quiet, he's waiting there for something to come, and then he sees a rabbit running, and then the rabbit hits the stump of a wood and dies. The hunter is happy, goes, takes the rabbit, goes home, cooks it, feeds the family. Next day, he goes to the stump waiting for a rabbit. Right? It happened yesterday. Great, all I have to do is just show up at the same place, same time, and then wait for a rabbit. Right? It's a funny story, but just stop and think how many times we do this in life. We sit by stump waiting for a rabbit.
So look towards the future as an open possibility without being attached to events in the past, and that will help you proceed with proper action.
Yeah, work with that. Just avoid the conclusions.
Okay.
Right? Work with that. You know, this is endless. All right. So again and again, we're not concluding anything.
Okay.
We're just pointing at something. Right.
All right.
All right. Okay. Okay. One last moment, and we have four vows finished. Great.
Maybe this will help. I was previously married, and in my previous relationship, there are certain things and certain dynamics and certain things that happen. My programming was, you take care of the house, you take care of the husband, you take care of their children. That's your duty as a woman. This is the way I was raised. Now I'm in a totally different relationship. And I'm cooking, I'm doing certain things, and my husband is not partaking in sometimes what I cook, or I want to do things for him, and he's self-sufficient.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, what is my role in this relationship? You know, I want to be taking care of my husband. I was taught to be doing this. I'm supposed
right.
to cook for him, wash his clothes, do this stuff. And he's doing everything for himself. So what do I do? You know, like, how do I take this new role?
Yeah.
And I talked to him about it. And I'm like, all right, am I not doing a good job as a wife? Or I feel like I'm not, you know, like, you don't allow me to do anything for you. And I said, well, since I was raised differently.
Right.
I was raised by a very strong mother to be self-sufficient, to cook, wash my own clothes, and clean up after myself.
Right.
And I was like, but that's my job. You're taking away my job. How am I supposed to, like, be in this relationship? He said, you're supposed to relax and enjoy it. And he goes, because you don't have to take care of me. I'm very self-sufficient. I can take care of myself. And sometimes I'm going to take care of you, and sometimes you're going to take care of me. Relax. I'm not your responsibility.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, I gotta get used to this new role in my life. I cannot go into my past and bring that past relationships and way of being into this one, because it doesn't work in this one. Because he feels like I'm mothering him instead of being his wife.
Yeah, it's a good teacher, right? It's a good teacher to not... to not hold on to fixed idea of how I should be, and then if I'm not, I'm failing.
Yes.
Right? That's the immediate, of course, that's the immediate conclusion. If I'm not doing this, I'm failing, right? But what is failing is the identity.
Yes.
Not you, which is good. Let it fail. Let your identity fail, or let reality show you that what we are identified with is disintegrating. Thank you. Okay, four vows.
Illusions.
so possible, I love to embody.
Squander your life.